Hello, guys. Welcome back to our podcast today. So I'm very, very excited to have Rafael Jacinto dos Santos here today. Most of us, if you're trained with us here at Alliance, that would be Hafa, by the way. So most people call him Hafa. And so we're super excited to have him here. He's like a brother to me, mentor, coach. And so we're super excited to have him here today. So welcome, Hafa.
Thanks so much for having me, Billy. It's my honor, my pleasure. You know how much it means to me to be on your podcast, especially because I have so much concern for you. You call me brother. I will take that. I would say you're a father figure, but I guess you're too young for that. Thanks so much. It's an honor. Just let you know. Okay. And this comes from my heart.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Kind of the theme that we're trying to establish with the podcast is really it's about really sharing with different people their stories and ups and downs maybe they've had, but really ultimately I think we're kind of kind of gets thrown around a lot right now with all the COVID-19 stuff about. I saw some commercials yesterday. It says, you know, we're all alone in this together kind of thing. But I feel like that's true, not just during this time, but really at all times. Like we all have certain, journeys that we're on. And then we might have, but we might have a different path, so to speak. And so really wanting to share different things about, you know, how really it's about, in my opinion, trying to be our best. No matter what we're doing and try to, you know, fulfill our potential as humans and so forth. And so everybody has kind of a different path, a different journey to doing that. And so that's kind of what I want to kind of touch on a little bit today. So I know your story, but if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about, like, so I know part of your path with that is you even have a tattoo. We were talking about tattoos last week, but a tattoo that kind of summarizes that a little bit. But a little bit of like your journey on that path, and kind of how you got started with jiu-jitsu, and if you can just share a little bit of that and how kind of how you ended up here in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yes, sir. So you wanted me to just go straight to where I started jiu-jitsu, or just a little background on everything?
Yeah, a little bit of background on you, and then, you know, I know jiu-jitsu is a big piece of that, but you know, just kind of a little bit of your story, you know, from, you know, your where you grew up and that sort of thing to kind of the evolution to how you're here now.
So I'm originally from Brazil. I'm from the state of São Paulo in the city called Batuba. So that's in the coast. I grew up there my whole life. So I would say I was very fortunate to grow up there. I grew up with the view of the ocean. So, you know, maybe we can save that for our next podcast because it's interesting, you know, we can go very deep to that because I have two spectrum living in one situation. I mean, I have this spectrum of grew up in front of the beach, but being poor, you know, but that sensation did not come to my mind when I was young because living in a big house, you know, having the opportunity to have most of the things I could have. Sometimes back then, I did not understand much where I was coming originally from, you know, and then my family's, you know, was poor, and then sometimes situations got hard, right? So I grew up with, of course, every Brazilian, big in soccer. My dad used to play every weekend, and I remember I used to play soccer in school, and then he would take me to the downtown in Batuba to go for a soccer game there as well, where I start in a soccer school and then start to play there for different teams, you know, would have competitions. So I grew up doing that, but then the trip was too long. For some reason, we stopped going downtown, and then eventually lost interest in soccer, and I ended up doing other arts like capoeira. Did not go too long too when I was young, and then I ended up, and then moving forward, I ended up doing surf. Probably was around so capoeira probably was around 9 years when I did capoeira, and then surf I started 10. And surf was a sport that I was doing like every single day when I catch myself. I was doing every single day. It was just part of my lifestyle, like jiu-jitsu is right now. And and then some friends was even giving me some help, you know, like giving me a board or give me how you call that, the vest you put on to go surf in the cold water, I forgot the name of. A dry suit, yeah. Like the people who dive, mm-hmm. yeah. So they would give me that because it's very, very expensive, especially in Brazil, because we import those, right? So I started to get, I guess, all right in surfing. And when I was start to, you know, surf a little better, accident happened. And then I was 13 back then. And then I have this surfboard come straight to my leg and open like 17 stitches. And then that's when things change, right? So then my mama said, no more surf. That's dangerous. She was scared, you know, she went to the hospital with me. So I stopped surfing. Then when my leg got better, I told my mom, okay, no more surf. So I want to do something else, right? And then she took me to a Taekwondo school. I started doing Taekwondo. And then I did the test for my yellow belt, but I never got my yellow belt in Taekwondo. My teacher has to move away because he was going to a physical education college in the city, neighbor to our city. And then I never got my belt. And then just the next day, then I heard my student was not going to teach anymore. I went to jiu-jitsu school. And as soon as I saw the class, I told my mom to next. And it was the only child, so I would be very annoying when I wanted something. And then I just stay on her ear for the whole night till the next day she came to the dental with me. She brought my gi and I started class the next day. And I guess everything else is a story from there. Has been since I was 13 to 14. I started in February 97. Now we are in 2020. So it's been, I not even know now how much is the number. Probably 23 years, something like, yeah, 23 years, 97, 20. So 23 years of jiu-jitsu. And when I started was something that I never stopped, right? So every day I was coming to the gym, I was, I guess, enjoying the process. And I remember, you know, the first day actually, maybe it was a weekend, but it was very short time that I was there. I remember going with this yellow belt, and then I did a double leg on him. And, well, it was not nice that he cried, but he cried, you know, like, and then felt like, you know, like I just started, and then I'm already doing this, you know. So it come from where I come from. Those positive feedback was just very, with a big impact on me, you know. And then I remember my friend taking me to the bus station because he had the bike, and then the gym was kind of far from the bus station. So he would take me, so I was behind his bike, you know, like the pedal bike. And then and they were talking about, you know, man, that was awesome, you know, he's been training for a long time and this. So he was, you know, planting the seed. And then I would just keep coming. I was there every day. I would finish school and then I would go to train. So I would study close to like Dantau was 04. So every time I finished the class, I would go to my teacher's house, Edmilson Alves, who I got my black belt from, right? So I would go to his house, stay there until the night class. And he was a police officer there in my city. So sometimes he would not teach the class. It would be Eder Chagas, who was purple belt back then, very technical, one of the most technical of our gym at the time there. And then I would go to his house, I would spend time with his family. He really took me under his wing, especially after I told him I would have to stop, right? I told him, because my mama was getting tight on the money, and then just going back a little bit before I finish, like sometimes and some days, because we live like 45 minutes away, and I would have to take a bus and would need cash for that, sometimes we didn't have, so I would be so annoying, it's hard, but I would be so annoying her. She would go to the neighbor, borrow money so she could give me ticket to go to train. You know what I mean? So that's crazy. And then we got a point where she was so tired with money, she said she could not continue to pay. And I told him I would have to stop, and then he just said, no, you can't stop, you know what I mean? And then he took me under his wing, so I was training with him. I got my yellow belt 6 months, we went to the nationals, I got second in 6 months of doing jiu-jitsu. Right after when I come back, after I got second in the national, he gave my orange belt, so that's, I was 14. The next year, I was gonna turn 15, I turned 15 that year that I got my orange belt, and my teacher forward to the blue belt when I turned 15, because it was gonna be the same year as I was gonna turn 16, you know what I mean? So he forwarded me the blue belt. So I remember when I trained under him, like very different scenarios. Like for example, I remember one time, this guy from a neighbor city there, where this taekwondo teacher went to physical school, right? This guy was a jiu-jitsu purple belt, and he wants to come to our gym to train with him, right? So he wanted to test this guy, and I was like 15 years old, you know, blue belt, the guy was very big. He probably have been doing MMA. He was adult, of course, you know, like he was probably in his 20, 25 or something like that. And he was supposed to show up at a certain time, and he didn't. And then I asked my teacher's wife if I could eat, so I just have that big plate of spaghetti. And sure enough, the guy is ringing the bell, boom. And then he was there in front of the door. He's like, okay, Rafael, you gonna go to the gym? I just eat it. And then I went to the gym, and then this guy, we're rolling. And I remember I was playing on the bottom, right? And the guy could not pass my guard. And then I was threatening him with a few submissions, getting some sweeps there and here. And then the guy kind of to my chair said, hey, you know what? I'm not really good on the top, you know, I can't play better for my guard. And then sure enough, he allowed him to play more bottom, then I keep passing his guard and everything. So I beat up the guy, and then my teacher would look around, like, you know, like judging the guy pretty much, you know. So it was some good start with him. So I trained with him till I was probably 19, 20, because that's when I got my black belt from him. So I trained from him from 13 to 20 years. And so, when I got my purple belt, I started to teach in my hometown. And my teacher, Jimilson, he was a police for the state, so he had to move from the city, right? So when I was purple belt, I started teaching in Ubatuba, close to my house, actually, a little far away from downtown. And since then, I have been teaching jiu-jitsu, right? So when I was 18, and then he would come back to the city, he gave me the brown belt and black belt. And when I was teaching at that place that I was teaching, I have a conversation with Marcio, who was here last year in December when I went to see him in Disney. I don't know if I mentioned that to you, Billy. And then we were having a conversation, and he said, you know, Rafael, because all the time, I think it's like I'm now, right? I have my students. My teacher was more of a hardcore teacher, would have the hardest training, but I wouldn't say he's very technical, right? He, like, you know, you see some guys break down techniques, you can see every piece of the movement. My teacher was more basic movements, maybe because the knowledge he has was more towards what he knew what to do. And but what, every training was a grinder, because remember sometimes guys coming from outside, from São Paulo, for big teams and everything, asking him to go outside and throw up because they could not keep up with the training, you know what I mean? That would make us feel amazing, you know what I mean? Especially those guys coming from outside. So was that's the situation, right? I was black belt, and then this my friend told me, Rafael, you know, why don't you try? Because like I said, just going back, like I would give everything for my students. I was probably becoming one of the most technical of my teacher's team. And my students was always winning national with states. We have a very good core of guys. Everybody kind of, especially for the federation that I was in, not specifically BJJF, but the other one, they call it the subdivision of Jiu-Jitsu. So my student was winning everything on that organization. And my friend was talking, I felt, you give me a lot of time for students. Don't you want to try to become a professional jiu-jitsu and everything? And then that thought came to my mind, you know, like for a week or so. Then I was thinking, you know, like I wasn't sure. I was 20 years, and then I was having a good time with my students. I was teaching them. I did not care, I guess. It always has been that way, because I always have been teaching, so I did not really care about much as me as I would care about others too, you know what I mean? And then sometimes to become an athlete, you have to be selfish, right? So I wasn't sure if that was what I want to do, because I was very invested in the time of my students too back then. And then come across on my head for a week. I was dating Marcel already, so I come to her, I told her that I want to do that, and got her thoughts on it. And then she was always very supportive, so she said, maybe you should try, you know. And then I talked to my mama, and then I talked to my teacher, and my teacher kind of agreed to. so the beginning of the transition is kind of a little funny there too. So he agreed to, and then we knew André to Careca, who's from San José, who was a very close city to us, André Galvão. And he was training under Tererê in São Paulo as a purple belt. So then my teacher knew Careca and everything. I would say, you know what, let me take you this school here. His name is Tererê, and then you train there with him. And then he took me to São Paulo. I was very welcomed by Tererê. I remember I brought a few checks from my mom. We just signed, and then I was paying for a few months. And then I made that transition, right? And but that when I made the transition, I moved to São Paulo, and then I started training there. Something happened between me and my teacher, because my teacher maybe thought I was going not forever, that I was going just to get knowledge and everything, maybe come back towards him. We, you know, we're a small team, and then I'm back from the time where loyal was above all. If you leave the team, you're crowned and everything. And I remember in the past, he going through situations where he lost his student, and that beat him, like he lost, he paralyzed the side of his body with emotion, you know, because he lost his student. So it was very hard in the beginning when I made that transition, because he was a little hurt with the situation that I told him, you know, if I'm gonna stay here and then I'm taking their knowledge, it's not fair for me to represent their team and not represent Tererê at this point, you know what I mean? Because that's what I'm gaining on my knowledge. And then to me, I always acted towards fairness, you know, that's my personality. And I told him that would not be the situation. Then I would have to do either one of the things, either stop everything that I was doing in São Paulo and come back to my school, or I would stay there and pursue my dream. If I would come back, maybe we'll never be here. So I pursued stay there, right? So when I went there and I was trying to do this, so my first role, just to go quick on that, you know, I'm never ashamed of saying those things, because those things only make us better. And then I was different levels too, right? So I was a teacher back then, I was already black belt, I was not maybe thinking of becoming professional jiu-jitsu, and then I went there and rolled with André, and in 10 minutes it happened 10 times, right? So that was very hurting the ego, but it was a very eye-opening to the level of the sport of jiu-jitsu, right? So that was the level beyond what I knew that could happen, right? Because before, everything was just magazine. I would read about the biggest school, like Alliance, Tererê, you know, they were very famous. Those were famous to us who were living there. So training with him was very nice, was a privilege. So I trained with André, I got that beat, and then I was keep coming. And I was living in a friend's apartment who were from my hometown, Batuba. And I was taking the train. And one day I was going back, and then Tererê was in the station, in the train station. And he said, hey, where are you going? I said, oh, I went back to this friend's apartment and this and that. He said, well, you know what? Grab your stuff, go to the gym. You can sleep on the mats. So then he invited me to go sleep on the mats, so I did not have to go back and forth. And then eventually I did not have to pay the membership. We have to clean the gym and everything else, sleep there. So it was kind of exchange. And then that's how I started with him. And then that time was André, purple belt, Leo, Lucas Leite, who was from Checkmat. At that time, I think they just have the break between like Tererê, Dame, and Leonardo Vieira from Alliance. So they were actually, when I moved there, Masters. They were representing kind of Master, because Master, I did not even know back then, Master was the logo from Jacaré. So Leo Vieira, Tererê, Teles, everybody was kind of under Master outside of Alliance. And they were training together. So we would have on the mats Leo Vieira, Damian Maia, Teles, Lucas Leite as a purple belt, Cobrin as a brown belt when he's come, he actually come later. So we would have all those good training there. And then eventually Tererê wanted to drop out from Master, right? For some reasons. And then he wanted to start his own team. So he dropped out from Master, and now he's just following his own. And then it was André, Cobrin, and me. Lucas Lepre would come once in a while, because he was from a hometown like 6 hours from there. So he would come to train with us only for the big events. Like sometimes we go for a camp and stuff like that. So Lucas would come there. So Sergio Moraes ended up joining us too. So all those big guys you see now was training under Tererê. And then Tererê probably is the biggest influence in jiu-jitsu nowadays. I think most of the competitor was under his wing back then is being successful now with jiu-jitsu. So it was amazing to see that too, and be part of that growth and that transition. And then eventually, those things happened today. If you guys can go search what happened, I think that was happened in 2005, 6 or something like that. And then he has those problems with drugs and has to stop. Gladly he came back. He's doing well. He's doing much better. And then when that happened today, Cobrinha ended up staying in São Paulo, because that's where I met Cobrinha at Tereré school, so we're great training partner, great friends there. But then when Tereré kind of happened and he has to stop, and then now Cobrinha has to choose going on his own and eventually get to Alliance, I decided that was no more for me, because I changed Tereré because my progression, everything. But on the other hand, I was loyal to my teacher too, so I kind of went back and told my teacher I was not meaning to stay in São Paulo anymore, because I would not go other team. And then I went back to his team. And then I went back to Batuba, and I talked to Cobrinha, and Cobrinha stays there in São Paulo, pursuing his stuff and everything else. And then I went back to my hometown, and then I still have Marcela, so she was the one reason for me to get back to, you know, not she said anything, but just felt was the time to go. And I guess felt more having things to lose staying there in São Paulo than going back. So I moved forward and went back. And then 1 year passed, Cobrinha moved to the US in 2008, between 2007 and 2008. And I remember the beginning of 2008, I was back at home teaching my students now with all the knowledge. Because when I left, because what was on my head, right? When I left back to my hometown with all the knowledge again in São Paulo, I thought, you know what? If I have to make something happen, I can make something happen wherever I'm at, with whoever I have, I will make happen. So that was my thought when I came back to Batuba. So I'm gonna go back to my hometown. I'm gonna, like I was the work I was doing before I moved to São Paulo, I'm gonna work on my students. I'm gonna make more champions, and I did. I make a lot of good guys there who are still living, some living in Singapore right now. So I went back, all that knowledge I have from Tereré, I was putting the work, and then was showing the results, especially coming from a small town, you know, my students was killing. And then I was doing all the work there, and then I have this kid who was really promising, you know what I mean? And then I knew Alliance was a big team back then, and then I emailed Cobrinha, you know, hey Cobrinha, I have this kid here who's doing really well. Then he applied back to me, but he did not even apply about my student. He applied, Rafael, you want to come to the US? I was surprised. So like, say what? And as much as I come with the mindset that I would make happen Batuba, my city is still a very small city, and I was probably make like what would be $300 a month to live. You know what I mean? Being a grown man, right? And then I would teach in different places to make some money too. So the opportunity that Billy presented to Corbin and to Jacare with the idea of coming here was very nice. So it was hard to say no to that offer, right? So it was hard to say that to the offer. So Corbin emailed and I say, well, I will. No, I just replied, I will. And I come back, I told my mom and everybody was very happy that it was a good opportunity, and talked to Marcela. I didn't have money back then, so Marcela, she was working. She took out of her bank account, like was $900 would be back then, so I could go to São Paulo and apply for my visa and everything, because it was very fast, everything. I think you remember, everything was very fast once that happened. And then she helped me out with that, make the transition for my visa, everything else. And then I did it. And then fast forward in May probably is when I came to the US and then become a part of Alliance. So I have been part of Alliance since 2008. And from there, that's how I ended up in Alliance. Yes, a long story. With so much into it, it's just so much stuff that's hard to go through all, you know. But yes, I think the measure of the story to end up in Alliance is that.
Yeah. It's kind of, so from my perspective on the other side of it is, I started out training with Jacare, and so at the time when I first started, you know, I think we talked with Chris, so I talked that on a podcast recently, but But I didn't really know who Jacare was. It was the only, it was the closest place I could find on BJJ.org, Atlanta. And I still remember looking at the website at the time. I can still picture it in my head. It was, I think it was Jacare, Fabio, I think Fabio's
Fernando's
brother, yeah. I think.
Fernando Grigio.
And it was kind of dark, and they just got through training. I'm like, that place looks scary. So, but I, you know, yeah. I said, all right, I'm going to go try this jiu-jitsu stuff out, and fell in love with it. But I still didn't know who Jacare was. I didn't know who was, like, the legend that, of course, later yes. that I learned how the Alliance team and all that. But after doing, you know, so eventually I started the school here, and really, honestly, it was just to get people to train with. And then I still had the gym and all that, and so I started, you know, talking to Jacare. Probably when I started the school actually when I was a blue belt.
Yeah,
so that's kind of interesting. Yeah, and and Jacare was very, very, very supportive. But I, you know, I talked to him about, you know, really I want to try to bring somebody else to teach because I want to be a student. I want to learn, and I know I'm not the best, so I would try to find somebody a lot better than me to teach. And so we had several different people come in for short periods of time, and you know, at the time, as I got to know Jacare, there's got to be somebody that would want to come here. And really, Jacare was looking out for me as far as the timing of it, I think. And then it just, you know, other side of it, I said it's like, you know, felt it was like a godsend that it ended up being you, because it's such a perfect fit as far as the personalities, what our goals are for the school and that sort of thing. But we had never met.
No, never.
And so really it was basically Cabrinha saying, hey, I know a guy and he knows a lot of jiu-jitsu. I'm like, well, if Cabrinha says he knows a lot of jiu-jitsu, he must know a lot of jiu-jitsu. But we never met.
Never met.
And I still remember when I think Cabrinha and Sergio were doing a seminar at
Louis
Tognos in Charlotte, and that's where I basically came to. No, I take that back. So I met you once
at the camp in May, around May, because we were having the camp before the Worlds.
Yep, we had the camp before the Worlds, and so you know, obviously they introduced me to you. Then you were going to compete in the Worlds, and then come back, and then you were going to move to Greenville. And I remember, so Cabrinha at the end, he's like, Hoffa's basically. Is like saying, you know, he'll see you next week because you spoke no English, mm-hmm. like zero,
nothing,
right? Nothing. And so that was a very interesting experience too. And,
yes.
And then the next week I go, you know, basically drive to Charlotte for the seminar, which is
we eat the sushi. I remember
eat sushi, and I was on. Everybody could speak Portuguese, but me. That was a good time, and we come back to Greenville and. You know, we just figured it out.
Yeah.
And I remember we went to get your cell phone.
Yes.
And thank God, the lady in the, it just happenstance, the lady in the store, she wasn't from Brazil, but
she speaks Portuguese from Portugal.
Portuguese from Portugal. So otherwise, we had never figured out how to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, starting out, I think I remember you and Walker, my son, would play Hangman.
Yeah.
And you would try to learn the word, and we figured it out. So it's amazing, you know, to me, thinking about that. So we talk about, like, you know, trying to become your best and that sort of thing. That's, if I was on the other side, that would be a scary adventure. Like, you're moving to a new country, you don't even know anybody, okay? I mean, you know Cabrinha and those guys, but they're in Atlanta. You're in Greenville. You don't know anybody. You've mm-hmm. never met me before.
No.
And hopefully Cabrinha had good things to say.
He had a great day. He said Bill is a man of word. Because I guess coming from a different country, and then like you're saying, you know, like, sorry to cut you on that.
Yep.
It's the uncertainty, right? Because as much as I'm fortunate to be in Greenville, because I love this place with my heart. It's become a home. It's my home. I love Batuba too, but at this point of time, I just have my mom. If I can make sure to bring her here, it would be awesome. But I have no more desire to go back as much as I have to stay, right? But having said that, I could end up anywhere in the U.S., you know what I mean? And could be, like Trump said, should hope, you know. But it's not, you know what I mean? So could be anywhere. Like, could be anywhere, maybe a place that would not be welcoming, maybe a place that people would not treat me nice, maybe a boss would maybe not honor his word, maybe, you know what I mean? So we never know, you know? Yep. So it's a real situation. But like, you like the, as much as you trust Corbin recommending somebody, I trust in him not putting me in a bad spot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So on your end, you trust his word, and in the end, I trust his word, and then everything else just work out well. Yes, and then here we are.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I want to ask you, I want to put words in your mouth, but I have one question I want to ask. I'm kind of trying to make this part of a theme. So is there anything like in your, I read a book several years ago called the, I think it was actually called The Hinge. And basically the idea was you could always kind of, you don't always know like in the, you don't always know at the time, but when you can reflect back, you can kind of see these points in your life, which you kind of, we call hinge moments or pivotal moments in your life. Like, and sometimes those things at the time may have seemed like a negative, they end up turning out to be a positive. Mm-hmm. Can you point to like something like that for you? Like where, you know, like for example, like even with the surfing. Yeah. I know you were very, very passionate about surfing. Assuming at the time when you couldn't surf, that was probably not, you didn't look at that as a very positive thing.
That was a big, that was a big crash on me because I love surf. And then I was thinking about, you know, one day maybe become professional surf, you know. And then the way I love jiu-jitsu, probably that would happen because I would go as far as I could go. And I'm a little stubborn, as you know. So I believe that was the key transition. I believe that was the impact moment where everything changed because here I am through jiu-jitsu. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. And if that would never happen, who knows? You know what I mean? Who knows? Like, if I did not go to... So I guess a different stage of those things happening, right? Because the surf happening, and then I have started jiu-jitsu, and then there's my friend coming to me. That was another changing moment too. So it's a different change moment there because then now I have the opportunity to go to São Paulo and meet those people who made me have access to come here, you know what I mean? So I think it's different pieces of transitions or life that's always becomes positive, you know what I mean? Like from negative become positive, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's for sure. But for sure, I think the negative event that happened was cutting myself because I was bad enough, right? Mm-hmm. It was a negative thing that happened. And fortunately, I found jiu-jitsu as a replacement and just love jiu-jitsu as much as I love surf. Maybe surf now is just a passion. My true love now is jiu-jitsu. Third day books. Or I guess I will love whatever I can do the best.
Well, I think that's what, you know, to me, there's the thing is like everybody can possibly find something. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to be the best in the world at it, but something they find a passion to pursue. Like I refer to it like as a, and you can take almost anything, like a path of mastery. Mm-hmm. You can kind of coast and just choose to do something like, you know, and this is the old saying, I mean, I think you have to have balance, I believe. You know, I shouldn't say you have to, but I think it's important if we want to be, you know, our best, that we have to have balance between things. But in terms of like, you know, the old saying is like, you can be a jack of trades or you can be like a master. Like you can't choose to master every single thing, you know.
This isn't your focus on one thing.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. Sometimes that can lead you to maybe not do other things that you could possibly do. I feel like that myself sometimes because I'm obsessed with jiu-jitsu. I bridge just 24 hours. It's 23 years of jiu-jitsu, but doing jiu-jitsu every day, looking videos, looking at magazines. My life is around jiu-jitsu. I have a tattoo saying that on my back. I'm obsessed with jiu-jitsu. And then somebody told me one day, I don't know if that was a negative way of saying that or not, say that I live maybe in a bubble. I'm very happy to live in my bubble. I'm very happy. Because just to go back a little bit, I think jiu-jitsu was my escape from what I may thought was a hard life, you know, because, like I said, I come from a very humble family who did not have much education, so the way of interacting sometimes maybe was not the healthiest. I never seen my dad raise a hand from my mom, that was never the case, but The argument between them was very wild. And a tool, that's a little tip there for whoever's parent. I would say you should never argue in front of your kids, because I think that can leave some traumas there. And I did not like that. You know, I think that really would stress me out, the way they would argue. With everything they would approach me, they would be very yelling, very, you know, like, would like very short temper, because there's not much understanding of other things. You know what I mean? So that's understandable, you know, because it's nature, right? When you have certain limit on certain thoughts, you're gonna, after that, there's no more rational way of thinking, and then you become more aggressive, right? And that's normal. And then I understood that as I grew up, but back then, I was upset. I would kind of raise my voice to them too, because that's how I was raised, right? So I would be that kid who, being the old child, stubborn, I would talk back sometimes. And going in jiu-jitsu actually taught me a lot, because when I started, and my teacher was very hardcore. He was a police first, you know what I mean? So he's already man of the law, and he has a black belt in jiu-jitsu, so has that discipline, right? So I remember one day, my mama calling, I call him to talk to him, and then I think I left the phone, and then got in the message. Then my mama and I get into the discussion. Then he hear that, and then the next day in the class, I don't know if it was good or not, maybe should not do that way, he caught my attention in front of the whole class, and it was shame, you know. And then I kind of did less of those things as I was growing up, you know what I mean? So he taught me a lesson there, you know. So I lost my thoughts there. On going back to that. So it was the one I was talking about, Chris.
Yeah, so basically the...
Because I went back to talk...
Yeah, the question was talking about pivotal moments. Moments, yes, that are important, that looked bad, but ended up being positive.
Yes. So then, so Bill, I think that's resumed a little bit to what we're going through.
Yeah. Is there any... I guess you've kind of covered some of this, but just thinking of it like kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning. So, you know, I see from my perspective, you know, when we talk about that journey of like personal growth and trying to be your best self, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Your path is really a lot through jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
And so how do you, you know, because I think a lot of people, we've had many, and that's why, again, I think it's been such a great fit for us, you know. And then some people look at, there's different aspects of jiu-jitsu. There's this aspect of, now the sport has grown tremendously.
Yes.
I think there's a lot to learn from the sport. And so you have, athletes, you know, so the sport, we have athletes competing in sport. And,
yes.
And I heard Martin Rooney say this one time, because if you guys don't know, Martin Rooney now is the, you know, founder of Training for Warriors, which we used to be affiliated with, learned a lot from Martin working with him. And really, Martin was, we're also affiliated with Parisi Speed School. So Martin used to be director of training for Parisi Speed School, and then he really started working with a lot of guys in jiu-jitsu and MMA for strength conditioning and all that. But he also, with Parisi, he worked with a lot of professional athletes getting ready like for NFL combines, as mm-hmm. an example. And I heard him say one time that basically, you know, he modeled kind of the Training for Warrior system more after martial arts. He said, because if you say you become a professional athlete, it doesn't always mean you're going to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but he felt like in martial arts, if you get to be a black belt, not only
yes,
you become 100%. A better person. So to me, a big piece of, I've seen with how you teach, is not just purely on the the competitive side of things, but really as people grow as human beings. And Jacare too, I think, you know, even though as big as Alliance is, as far as the team and all that, I think part of it was, you know, if you were a crappy person, you probably, you know, weren't going to get your
black belt. Yes,
100%. I agree. So it's not based purely on. So can you shed a little light on that from your philosophy?
Yes, and then you're 100% right. I grew up probably towards the competition, doing a lot of that. But on the other side, too, the discipline. Like I said, my teacher was very disciplined, as I described the situation before, where he kind of correct me. So the martial art was always the biggest part, right? Because actually when I started jiu-jitsu, my teacher was not really in a federation of sport jiu-jitsu, you know, like yet. So he came, after a few years, he kind of signed up with the federation that was the FASP Federation, CBJJE. And then eventually end up going to BGF. But he was not first in sports. So everything else was very disciplined. You know what I mean? Like I said, we have to bow to everybody, respect the black belt. So I grew up with that. And now I'm more laid back. And I guess is the growth of everything, right? We kind of balance a little bit more. So the discipline and it was very important for him. And then I grew up with that. So to me, the most important part is the philosophy of martial arts. The sport is just a consequence of the growth of the art. You know what I mean? So sport comes second. The arts come first. You know what I mean? So being a world champion or be a champion jiu-jitsu doesn't make a good person. What makes a good person is how you carry yourself, how you react to situations, how you overcome problems, how you help your neighbor, you know what I mean? How you help your teammates, how, you know, those are the things that count the most than winning a gold medal, you know what I mean? Because like I said, and then if you think, if you're thinking about that, and I think I hear Fab say that too, any or most of the gyms, the competitors are maybe 1 or 2% of the whole gym, you know what I mean? Those are important because I believe competition helps us display what you work and show us what we are not working and what is supposed to be working. So competition is to better ourselves as a technician, but to grow ourselves as a person is through the journey, right? The journey means doing your best, be accountable, be a good teammate, being disciplined to whatever you choose to do, and I think honor your word is part of that. Ever steps you make to get your jiu-jitsu better, you should that the same way to make yourself better. Because the grind to make yourself a better athlete is just is similar to better self as a person, right? Because you would go there, you drill the technique based on the other person's reaction, and then if you don't see the difficult on doing that and have to humble yourself to learn a new thing, you're not opening your mind to learn the other aspect of the art, you know what I mean? So you can't just be a good athlete and forget the most important part that's the martial art philosophy, you know? Is the honor of code of the samurais, you know? I actually have a samurai tattoo on my ribs because that's what I do. That's a way of me remember myself. That's what I live for. And I live for martial arts, you know what I mean? Like I said, I live in my bubble, I'm very happy. And that's it. I think the most important part is the philosophy of martial arts. If you're not helping somebody get better on their daily basis, you're not doing your job, you know what I mean? And then to me, the business became a consequence, right? I started jiu-jitsu at 13, so I have no idea that I'm gonna become a teacher, that I'm gonna become, you know, like teaching in your school, come to the US. That come after everything else, you know what I mean? So, of course, the growth of the person, the success of my students is most more important than their gold medal in competition. You know what I mean? If I can touch any of the kids and then one day I see, man, this kid now has become a doctor and he still come here to do jiu-jitsu, that's going to be my biggest win, right? When I'm doing the live videos with, you know, everybody, every students, and everybody have to talk about the background. And that's pretty much what they describe, their difficulties, their process of growth, you know what I mean? The moments they went through and how much the hard work make them a better person, you know what I mean? And those are the most meaningful things that I could hear from them, then go there. Of course, it's nice to bring the members of the competition and everything else. Those are great moments. But the most important is see how successful they are on the outside life of jiu-jitsu. I'm not gonna say his name. I like to remember that. I think Chris knows because I mentioned that one time maybe in a group, and then even the person mentioned that in our group. We have group chat there on Facebook, just a message. And then he said that he has to do something on his house or for his wife to make sure she's happy and everything else, so he could have his time free to do his jiu-jitsu. So his dad's jiu-jitsu helped him become a better husband.
Yeah.
So he had the time to become jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know, I feel that's the impact of doing jiu-jitsu that's helping him. And then, like some of the others say, too, like not having jiu-jitsu now, I'm drinking a little bit more than I used to. So you see, all the positive impacts I make is the beauty of this.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Make people have a better choice, because I was talking to somebody on the live the other day, like, jiu-jitsu, eventually, if you want to go any better, if you want to get better, if you want to go to a next level, if you want to really be good, jiu-jitsu will ask you to stop certain things. No, jiu-jitsu will ask you, because your body will not allow you to get there if you don't make those changes. You know what I mean? It's just, it's just like we said, the mat doesn't lie.
Yeah, yeah.
The, you're going to guess out. You're going to stop at the first two rows. And then your body only going to adapt to that if you really make the change you need to change.
Yeah.
And that's not just doing eventually going to get there. No, your body will not respond if you don't change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I think
the answer is that.
Yeah, that's also, I mean, I think that's one of the favorite things for me. Yeah, you get, you know, you're like I said, the grind, right? So you're in the grind and you're training or you're working, because you're teaching all the time and you're training hard. And then I think one of the cool things is when we do like belt promotions, the way we do them now is you know, we usually ask the person to say just a few words,
mm-hmm.
and just hearing, same thing you're doing with Instagram Live, like you're hearing the impact of your, what you're teaching and the jiu-jitsu on people's lives beyond just getting the belt, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what gives us energy, right?
Yes.
To keep going, because yes. You know, it's like it's all worth it when you hear that. You
yes.
know? And I think you mentioned the other thing too is the mats don't lie. I think there's not a lot really. I mean, you know, if you look at like you know, social media, different things, people can say anything. They can, you know, do all this different stuff. So, you know, the mat is the one place where, even like, you know, I have a fitness gym, and so it's not a knock on CrossFit or anything, but like when we're CrossFit affiliates, you would, you know, every workout was kind of like a competition, mm-hmm. right? But in that competition, you also had to self kind of police yourself in terms of like, say, your technique.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a certain standard, but you're really holding yourself accountable to the standard. So mm-hmm. if you say, okay, a push-up, a pull-up, let's say, it doesn't count unless you get your chin over the bar and you let your arms fully extend. Well, mm-hmm. everybody has different limitations, range of motion, that sort of thing. But generally speaking, you want to go full range, right? So, and then I put my score on the board. You know, it's up to me to whether or not it's a true score or mm-hmm. not. But the cool thing about jiu-jitsu, it's real simple.
Yeah, you're about to tap.
You know, I can't make excuses. I can't cheat. Yeah. You know, because
somebody's gonna expose you.
You're gonna get exposed, and so it's either, it can be very humbling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about it is, you know, the growth of some people. You know, you see that. You know, it was humbling, but it's now the growth beyond that. And mm-hmm. so everybody, I think everybody that comes, you know, jiu-jitsu is gonna be humbled in the beginning. I don't know that anybody, you know. Maybe they come with like, even I think even people like come with a grappling background, like maybe some, you know, college wrestlers and that sort of thing. They still get humbled in you. So it's I think it's, you know, sometimes you say like a bubble, but I think even within that bubble.
That's not what I said. That's somebody else told me though. Yeah. I just say that I would take it as a compliment.
But even in that bubble, you know, of just doing jiu-jitsu, you can't lie to yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, so all those things, if you're paying attention, every day is an opportunity to learn. And I think like even the competition, if you approach it that way, it's just a chance to learn. It's
yes.
just to give you, you go out and you're training it, you know, go against different, you see how, like for me, I know competition is, I'll say, you know, trying to change that mindset. I think you told me one time in a match, like, Billy, do you even remember what happened?
Yes.
Because I get really like anxious about it. And, it should be no different
yeah.
in the gym.
Yeah.
But that's so for me, that's always a learning experience when 100%. I go and face that, because I learn how to deal with that 100%. Pressure and anxiety better.
100%.
And then come back, and if you lose, you learn.
Yes.
You know, so there's really no negative
on that.
In the process
yes.
if you approach it.
It's like I told Keen, you know, like we talk exactly like that, like because he was, he won his division, and, you know, that's the mindset champ, and he crashed on his car because he lost the open class against a giant, right? The guy was 230, he was only 150 something. He lost by one advantage, so, but he felt very upset that he lost, even with the gold beside him. But then I was going to try to talk to him, it's like, I think it's very important to understand, is the journey.
Yeah.
Because when you prepare yourself for a competition, you're getting better. The medal is just a consequence of the work you're putting, that either will come or not. You know what I mean? That's when you compete, somebody has to win, right? Right. Doesn't mean it's going to be you. But if you did not sign up to compete, how much effort would you have put in yourself to compete, right? So there's only gain if you're thinking about.
Yeah.
And the only maybe sad loss at the momentaneous situation or specific moment is the loss of a man. But look how many months you have put yourself in to get to that competition. So you definitely learn more, because now instead of coming 3 times a week, you may come in every day a week. And maybe instead of coming every day a week, now you're coming twice every day a week. Now maybe you're coming every day a week twice and doing conditioning. You know what I mean? So you're stepping up towards the competition. And then you go there, lose the competition. Sad, yes. But do never forget the journey to get there.
Yep.
I think that's the most important, because if you throw everything away because you lost the mat, you're not taking a deeper look into the journey. You know what I mean? And then some people get caught up on that because it's frustrating. Don't get me wrong. You know, losing is very frustrating. I myself, it's a hard one for me, because it's hard to me to think, because I hate losing, but I was never a quitter, because I always shake that off, and then I always go back to the gym and work hard, and I always try to control the situation I can, right? So that's me. But going back now, and I can't blame any circumstance or my life was different than somebody else, because everybody had a hard life, everybody has their own problems and everything else. So I do not want to judge or anything. But definitely, my mindset as a growing up on the sport, could be for many different reasons, I was not ever the best competing. I could never perform as well. And I think it was always because of the fear of losing. You know what I mean? Always the fear of I have to prove something, not just to me, but to somebody else. You know what I mean? I always care that on me. And that's only my fault for caring that and not open my mind to clear that up. And that eventually came with maturity. You know what I mean? That eventually let my, like, competing after 30 something years old was better for me than when I was 20. Because 20, I would not think the way I think now, in like that, thinking about the journey. You know what I mean? Maybe when I was young, I would not think about the journey, only the pressure of doing the competition. You know what I mean? And then when I lost, you know, it, you know, could, like I said, many reasons, right? Like going to World Championship, that was the biggest goal. And then sometimes I end up asking myself, how much did I really want to be world champion, or how much I just love jiu-jitsu? Because when things, like, for example, when I have to go back to Ubatuba, some people made the choice to stay there and break the relationship with somebody else. I choose to go back to Marcella, because maybe I did not prioritize jiu-jitsu, stay in São Paulo, bigger than go back to my city and be around the people I love. You know what I mean? So there's choice you make, and then sometimes you have to ask yourself if it deeply that was ever I want to be world champion. Maybe I'd be lying if I say I would not, because I want to be world champion. But maybe did I make the sacrifice to be the world champion? Maybe when I supposed to, maybe I did not. And then definitely competing become easier when I could do full time without having to worry about other stuff, right? Like what I mean, like I know when I'm doing my work, every month I get paid, so I don't have to worry about getting paid now, right? Because I have my salary, so then that means I can train without thinking about the bills. So okay, that's one release. Now I have my life established, so that's one more release, right? So you can train with less pressure of something else that's going to be in the way, right? So I always want to have to think about bills sometimes. We'll not let it clear, think clear about other things, you know? So then when life got more stable, and then I could do more of the things I was supposed to do, that made a progression on my competition too. Because, you know, I did not win at the Master Worlds, but there's a very hard level of difficulty on that. But I got close to the competition and to win a gold, right? Second place is just you have your hand there. One match I lose fair square, another one was decision. The losing decision always sucks, because the one who's deciding for you is the referee. So that's always leave a very hard taste on your mouth, you know what I mean? Yes, so definitely you should always look towards the journey instead of just looking to the prize, you know.
So Mark Devine has a saying he learned from his karate instructor, which was basically fall down 7 times, get up 8.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, jiu-jitsu. I
mean, yes,
that's
yes,
jiu-jitsu, yes, for sure.
100%.
All right.
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, we could talk all day, me and you.
I know.
So we're going to kind of finish up the podcast. So again, appreciate you, love you. Again, you know, you're a huge part of my life, and so we appreciate you here. Is you know, and I think I know all the students here at Alliance appreciate you being here. It's been a, like I said, a godsend to have you here, and look forward to keeping it going. I'm sure we'll do another podcast. We talk on some other subjects too. We were talking before off the cusp here a little bit, but appreciate you, and we'll see you guys next week.